Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's interview. You know, this is a really special day. We have one of the real rock stars in this industry. This is Mr. Nathan Kottkamp, who is the founder and chair of the National Healthcare Decisions Day, which occurs each year on April 16, and will be celebrating its 11th year in 2018. So welcome, Nathan.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. Sorry the video's not working.
That's okay. This is going to be an audio recording, and that is completely okay. In fact, this way the people can really focus on every single word that comes out of your mouth. So I'm thrilled about that. So again, thank you so much. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about the National Healthcare Decisions Day program and all that inspired it and all the wonderful organizations that are a part of it. But I would love you to touch on your law practice in Virginia, because what you do is very, very relevant to all the topics this telesummit is about. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, my practice, I'm with McGuire Woods in Richmond, Virginia. We are just in the last week were named, I believe, the largest healthcare practice in the country. So I get to see a lot of different things in my day job, if you will. I do a lot of HIPAA work and other things like that. But in addition to being a lawyer, I also have a real passion for ethics issues. I have a master's in bioethics that I got from the University of Pittsburgh along with my law degree. And I was very, very fortunate as a young attorney to be able to start working with several hospitals on their ethics committees. And what I saw as a very recurring pattern for the ethics consults were situations in which we were trying to figure out, in some sense they were ethics issues, but really at the core, they were communication issues. The theme over and over and over and over again was someone who had a terrible acute illness, usually not something that was, an emergency situation. These were people more often than not who had been dealing with cancer or heart disease or lung disease for very, very, very long periods of time. And the disease progressed to a point where they could no longer speak for themselves. And then you got a patient in the ICU who's incapable of making decisions for themselves, no written instructions, and oftentimes a big complicated family that can't come to agreement as to what to do with the patient.
And that happens more often than so many people even realize.
Oh, it's like a broken record. It is such a common situation, and it shouldn't be a surprise given that the data shows that in various forms and various fashions over and over and over again, and personal experience with my own hospitals has shown this, only between 20, maybe at the most 25% of the general population has a written advance directive.
Right.
So you're dealing with, the odds are 3/4, 4/5 of the population don't have written instructions. And maybe some portion of those folks have had conversations with their loved ones, but the experience bears out that that hasn't happened. And then, we've seen some real headliner cases like the Terry Schiavo case from, 15 years ago or wherever that was, where conversations allegedly happened, but the content of the conversation was dramatically different based on who it was that you talked to. So there are just so many ways in which the issue can be a problem when people just don't talk about it. And part of that, I don't want to put too much blame on the health profession, but they bear a serious responsibility for some of this as well. And that's one of the reasons that advanced directives and advanced care planning within National Healthcare Decisions Day is focused both on the professionals and on the providers. But, I really have a big problem with the thought of someone who's been dealing with cancer for 5 or 10 years, or whatever the case may be, even just a year or several months. How is it possible that somebody who is having weekly, sometimes daily interactions with medical teams, how is it possible that we could let that person get to a stage where they could become so sick that they can't make decisions for themselves, and yet we haven't talked about what we're going to do if that happens.
That's right. That's right. And before you move on, just in case some of the listeners are not familiar with the Terry Schiavo case, can you just give them like a 60-second sort of thumbnail description?
So Terry Schiavo, if you aren't familiar with it, perhaps it's because you're a young listener, and that's fine. It's actually a great case to highlight the fact that advanced care planning is actually something that should be done by all people, because Terry Schiavo was a young married woman in her late 20s who unfortunately also had an eating disorder, as we understand the situation. And as a result of her eating disorder, had some acute health issues that rendered her incapable of making decisions. And she was, depending on who you ask, either in a persistent vegetative state or just simply unable to make decisions for herself. And there's some debate about that. But the ultimate issue is that her husband asserted that he had conversations with her in which she said that she didn't want to be on a feeding tube and hooked up to life support and things like that. And her parents asserted that they had similar conversations with her where she asserted that she would, want to be kept alive at all costs. And it became a big political issue, it became a big media issue. And from my perspective, the big, big tragedy is not, I don't know what happened in those conversations. None of us that were not in that room when those conversations did or didn't occur will ever know. But what's sad to me is that we all, and they had to endure that, because if the conversations that were allegedly taking place actually happened, why didn't somebody then put that down in writing? Right. And it would solve the whole problem. So it was a very sad situation. And interestingly enough, about the young people issue, Terry Schiavo's case was the third in the string of major headlining, policy changing cases involving women in their 20s. The whole reason that we have the laws that we do is from a woman named Nancy Cruzan. She was in her 20s, had a car accident. I don't think it even involved drugs or alcohol or anything else like that. But her car flipped over. She landed in about 2 inches of water, face first, and had a hypoxic brain injury. And there was a debate about whether or not the state hospital where she was in Missouri could disconnect the life support. And then a decade after that, there was a woman named Karen Ann Quinlan, who had a drug and alcohol issue, and that happened while she was in her 20s as well. And so, a lot of people think about advanced care planning in terms of older people and strokes and dementia and cancer and things like that. But the reality is, every one of us could have an acute issue that could render us incapable of making decisions, literally at any time. I mean, you hear about marathon runners dropping dead of a heart attack, and the proverbial, you literally could get hit by a bus, you could have a car accident, you could have a drunk driver hit you. You just never, ever know. And some of the saddest cases that I've ever had to deal with are things like young mothers who elected not to be married to the father, but the father is fully engaged in the child, the parenting process. And mom has a postpartum issue, and she's in a coma. And the father, who is a participant, lives in the house. The grandparents love him as a son, even though he's not married. And yet, by law, he's got no authority to make decisions for his own child and his partner, because nobody thought to say, "Hey, you should have a written advance directive." Because otherwise the law is going to defer to the parents.
Exactly. So, and I think one of the great gifts, if you will, I don't know if that's the right way to put it, with these horrible, the three examples you gave of these young women, and Terry being, I guess, was the most recent that was got such notoriety, is that, yep, I believe she had a stroke at 29 because of, yep, her issues. And what you didn't mention, and what some of the listeners need to know, is that the husband and her parents fought for 15 years.
Oh yeah. It went all the way. It was raised in Congress. I believe it went to the Supreme Court. It was addressed by the Supreme Court of Florida. It was a big mess. It cost the taxpayers in the United States a lot of money. I mean, you think about some of the waste that's involved right. in not knowing decisions, and that's a perfect example. Yes. But interestingly enough, you mentioned the word gift. Advanced care planning is oftentimes, for those of us sort of in the industry, if you will, I don't know if it's an industry, but those of us that spend a lot of time with it do oftentimes consider it to be a gift, because it is something that can so effectively reduce some of the burden that happens on family. I mean, it's a horrible situation to make decisions for yourself. It's way worse to make decisions for somebody else. And it's even worse to make decisions for somebody else when you're guessing about what you're supposed to do.
That's exactly right. So I do want, let's do dive into the whole National Healthcare Decisions Day and what inspired that, and tell us a little about all the different wonderful organizations that are involved in it. And the gift of Terry Schiavo and those other ladies is that because it did get such press, it put the hot white spotlight on, just because you're young, don't think this can't happen to you, and this is important for every single person 18 years or older to get these documents done. So tell us a little bit about National Healthcare Decisions Day.
Yeah, well, as I indicated, this really came out of my work on the ethics committees, and I just got sick and tired of seeing the cases come up over and over and over again with the lack of advanced care planning really being the driver of these consults. And it's a two-pronged problem. First of all is the issue, and it's chicken and egg sort of, but there's the issue of the general public not having plans, not having conversations. And we understand nobody wants to talk about death and disability. It's just not an American thing to do. So it just doesn't happen. Similarly, on the healthcare side, it's not a conversation that tends to happen for lots of different reasons. We now have a mechanism for some modest reimbursement by Medicare, but private insurers don't necessarily pay for it. It can be time consuming, and you know, in this day and age when a physician is supposed to be rolling through 10 patients in an hour and things like that, mm-hmm. there's not time to do this. So it's easy to see how it gets lost. The other thing is, you know, you think about the terminology we use when we talk about cancer. We talk about, you know, fight and war and, you know, these really aggressive terms. We don't ever want to conceive of the notion of defeat. So the concept of talking about advanced care planning is primarily, although not exclusively, about end of life choices. And so if you're the oncologist, you don't even want to go there. That's a door you want to be, you know, bolted shut. But the reality is, we do a disservice to ourselves. We do a disservice to patients when we don't acknowledge that. And so one of the things I bring up, you know, on the cancer front, for example, where we use sort of war and battle language, if you look at military history, the best generals, the best leaders, commanders in the world in military history also intimately understood when it was important to retreat.
Right.
And sometimes you've got to do that. And sometimes you've got to have a plan for that retreat. And so it's fine to treat cancer as a war, but you also know when to surrender. And what happens is we focus so much on the fight that when the time to surrender happens, we're not prepared. And that's when things get really ugly. They get really sad. And one of the things that happens to me is that, you know, I give presentations to the public and I get people come up to me and they say that they still agonize over the decisions they made for their mom or their dad or their brother, or their sister, or their son 10, 15, 20 years ago. You can't erase it.
Because they were guessing, because they hadn't had the conversation.
Exactly. And again, back to the gift. What a gift it would have been to make that, you know, no death is easy, but how about relieving the burden of the guesswork? And then you can focus on the goodbyes.
Right. Exactly. Absolutely, exactly. So many different wonderful organizations that are a part of National Healthcare Decisions Day. Tell us again, the day, why that day was selected, and the different sure. organizations that are involved with it.
Well, one of the problems with the conversation is it's so focused on death that people don't like to have it. So we just tried to turn that around, and we were inspired by Ben Franklin's little quip that nothing in life is certain but death and taxes.
Right.
So So we selected the day after tax day every year. So, you know, finish your taxes, you know, do all that, and then focus on the other inevitability in your life. And, you know, some people like that. Some people are like, oh, come on, that's just ridiculous. But, you know, it gets people's attention.
I thought it was genius.
Yeah, I mean, we've succeeded on that front. Yeah. But in terms of the participation, we have this amazing group of participants. We are really technically a coalition because we don't exist as a separate entity. We're not incorporated. You know, we have an advisory board and all that. But really, it's just a coalition. It's a day that we've selected to enable everyone that does something in this topic to try and do something together so that we can hopefully get better media attention, get public attention, things like that. So at the national level, we have got some of the absolute best known organizations in healthcare and law and things like that. So we've got the American Medical Association, the American Bar Association, the American Hospital Association, American Nurses Association, AARP, the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, the Catholic Health Organizations. We've got essentially folks on the far right and the far left of political spectrums. We have religious and non-religious organizations. We have just professional organizations. We've got financial planners because this comes into play with them. But we don't have any particular agenda. So there's no particular form that we're trying to push. We just want people to all band together and get their message out and let people, you know, if you're Catholic, go get the Catholic resources. If you're Jewish, go get the Jewish resources. If you want whatever it is you want, that's fine. And we're not saying one is any better than the other. And that's one of the things that's really helped it is that it is not prescriptive. We don't take positions on things. So it enables people on the far right and the far left to all say, you're right, I might not make the same substantive choices about my care, but I can at least respect the fact that it's important for you to be able to voice your wishes, and at least to the degree that it's appropriate for us as a society, as a medical system, to be able to honor those choices.
And I have to tell you, so the website, everybody, is nhdd.org. So National Healthcare Decisions Day acronym is nhdd.org. And you will be just so amazed at, as he said, the variety of options you have to go get these things, get the Living Well Healthcare Power of Attorney documents done. Speak a little bit, Nathan, about the Conversation Project. That's such a big part of this.
Yeah. So the Conversation Project is our key partner in all this these days. They are, they're located up in Boston. They are also national scope and really don't take any position on what people's choices ought to be either. They exist to encourage people to have conversations. It was started by Ellen Goodman. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning author and pretty well known. And they host our website. They help us organize webinars. They put us in touch with people and help curate some of the content that we have on the website. And then from there, really, you know, we mentioned the national organizations, but the real work happens in the communities. And we have literally thousands of participants in all parts of the country, every one of the 50 states. We actually also have some international events in that Canada was inspired by our event, and they have a national advanced care planning day on April 16. And then I'm still waiting to have to go down and do some little site work here, but New Zealand.
Well, you definitely have to do a site visit for that one.
I know. I'm trying to figure that out. So, so U.S., Canada.
If you need a helper, you know, let me know. I'd be happy to go.
Well, you know, I like to think of it as we're trying to take over from what was the British Empire. So, right. You know, we're getting there. The sun never sets in National Healthcare Decisions Day, I guess, is one way of looking at it.
And this clearly is a worldwide, universal issue. I mean, we're all going to cross over the rainbow. So this isn't just a U.S. thing by any means. This is, you know, every human being walking the planet needs to be doing this.
Absolutely. And it matters no matter what kind of healthcare structure people have in their particular homeland, and because all of us are going to die. Right. And there, it's very well recognized that there's good ways to die and there's bad ways to die. And surely the vast majority of the time, advanced care planning is about end of life, but it's also, I have to point out, it's not just end of life issues.
You need this stuff if you're going to go in for back surgery, right?
You do, but also, because things go wrong there. But also another place that has really seen a substantial growth in the application of advanced care planning is with mental illness. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes mental illness is a chronic issue with recurring episodes. And when folks who have mental health issues have their episodes, they oftentimes know the best way to be treated, but they may not be able to voice that because they're in crisis.
Right.
So if they can, when they return to their point of stability, can sit down with their loved ones, sit down with their doctors and say, here's the playbook. When this thing happens to me again, whatever that thing may be, here's the best way to get me on back to baseline.
Right.
And what a tremendously powerful tool, because otherwise, at least in the context of mental health, what ends up happening in the alternative is court-ordered treatment, involuntary treatment. It's an ugly, ugly process that could be made much, much, much simpler, much less dramatic, much less contentious, and as a society, much less expensive, if we could know from the outset what to do for a patient when they enter crisis.
And in my hospice work, what we talk about when we're helping people with these documents is it's called advanced care planning because you want to do it in advance of that crisis. So that was a perfect example. This person, while they're stable and decisional, that's when you sit down and talk about, well, that mental health issue that you just described, but also let's say you're talking about, you gather your family together and you're going to talk about what you want and what you don't want and that kind of thing. It's a lot easier talking about going on a ventilator when you really don't have to go on a ventilator.
That's right.
And it's called advance because you want to do it in advance of a crisis or a serious illness situation or the unexpected. You know, that's why you do it in advance. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned so many ways people can do something in their community. The website does have a long list of suggestions and examples of what communities have done. So you can think about that.
Yeah. I'll start with the community and then I'll go to the individual. So in the community, there's all sorts of things you can do. We've had religious organizations, churches, synagogues, mosques, you name it, hold events. We've encouraged the leadership of those types of religious organizations to have sermons or Bible studies or discussion groups about these topics. But even just holding like a town hall sort of meeting where somebody comes in, trust me, you can find a lawyer to do this for free in any town in the United States, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
To come in and just describe how the process works, how it's important, talk about the particular requirements under state law in the particular jurisdiction in which you live. But we've had Rotary groups talk about it, Kiwanis groups, again, book clubs. There have been movie screenings that have happened with a movie that raises end-of-life issues, followed by a discussion. We've had roundtable discussions. We've had lectures. We've had panel discussions. There have been some of my favorite ones have been the ones where comedy clubs, I kid you not, clubs have done improv nights on death and dying and things like that. Because you know what? You can talk about it in a funny way. Sometimes, you know, the best way to confront a difficult topic is to make fun of it. Unlimited potential.
I have to share this real quickly. There was a wonderful gentleman who used to be a chaplain at hospice. He got he wanted to be cremated, and so he got the cardboard cremation box, brought it to his favorite cafe, and brought crayons and paints and things, and had all of his friends decorate it.
Awesome.
Had an awesome time.
I love it.
Yeah.
So we talked about the community at the individual level. One of the things that we hope will happen on National Healthcare Decisions Day or around that time. It doesn't have to happen that day, but one of the biggest problems that we have with getting people to take action is they don't know how to start, and it never feels like the right time. You know, we put too much emphasis on this. We make it such a big deal that it's really easy to say, oh, just, you know, well, it's too close to dad's birthday, or mom just got out of the hospital, I don't want to get her depressed, or whatever the case is. So the way to address that, or at least one way to address it, and what we do with National Healthcare Decisions Day, is cut across all of that and say, you know what, we're picking a day. In the same way that Breast Cancer Awareness Month doesn't, you know, yeah, it was inspired by one individual, but otherwise, it doesn't, it's not about you. It's just that's the day.
Right.
Heart disease, you know, any of these awareness days, it's just the day. So what we say to people is, on April 16, I don't care what's going on, whether it's your birthday, your anniversary, it's the day your mom got out of the hospital. It's just the day. Mark your calendar, and nobody gets up from the dining room table until we've had a conversation.
Right.
And then you say, well, how do I start that? It feels so awkward. Well, we got a slew of tools on the website that enable you to get that conversation started. And if you're looking for just one of the easiest, simple examples, I would say go to the website, so nhdd.org, as you mentioned, and scroll down, and on the left, there's a link to a video, and you'll see the word imagine.
Oh my gosh, I play that video at every presentation I give.
It's 3.5 minutes long.
Fabulous.
It came to us from our friends in Canada. I didn't have a single thing to do with its content, so I can tell you, completely objectively, it is awesome.
It is awesome. I play it.
Probably watched it.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, I've literally watched it 100 times or more, and I still get goosebumps every time I see it. So, what my challenge to any of the listeners would be: show that to your family. You don't have to say a word. Literally, don't say a word. Go to your computer, hit click, and I can all but guarantee you that what will happen after that thing is done, 3.5 minutes later, you will have one of the richest conversations with your family members you have ever had.
I could not agree with you more, Nathan. I could not agree with you more. It's magic. It's 3 minutes and 20 seconds of magic. It is.
It's amazing. So kudos to our friends in Canada that did that and were kind enough to let us take it over and use it for National Healthcare Decisions Day.
And you mentioned at the very beginning, you were talking about the hospitals and ethics and all that kind of thing. There's a medical school in Winston-Salem here, Wake Forest Medical School, and their residents come spend 15 minutes with me, and that's the first thing I show them is that video.
Awesome. I love it. Love it.
Yeah. So I want to be respectful of your time. Give us some best practices. I hope that's not too big and vague, but...
No, it's absolutely not too big and vague. And so my first best practice goes all the way back to what we did with National Healthcare Decisions Day. We assembled a group of national leaders in this topic, and one of the biggest challenges we had was trying to figure out what it was going to look like on day one. Mm-hmm. And over and over and over again, my philosophy was don't let perfect be the enemy of good. It doesn't matter what you do, just do something. Mm-hmm. Don't try and make it perfect. It's never going to be exactly as you imagine, but it's going to be great no matter what you do. So just do it.
Right.
The second is try to think outside the box. If you are a healthcare provider and work in a hospital, how can you get outside of your four walls and get into the community? If you are an individual, think about how you can scale this so that you're not just reaching out to your family, but you're reaching out to your friends and your coworkers and your other loved ones. You know, we think about this as an older person issue. It's a lot of, you know, baby boomers are thinking, what do we do with my parents, my octogenarian 90-year-old parents and things like that. But do you know what your 20-year-old kid wants?
Right.
The one who's riding around on a motorcycle every day. Or like me as a competitive cyclist, and literally every day I get on the bike, I'm risking some sort of catastrophic something.
Right.
My wife knows what would happen, and it's not to say that I'm going to be reckless because of that. Absolutely to the contrary, but you got to have that. So you have to think of it interdisciplinary. You need to think of it intergenerational. Mm-hmm. And then help us spread the word. We are grassroots. We don't have any money. We don't have any budget. So get out there on Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram and whatever, and tell your friends, tell your family. You don't have to share your content, except with the people for whom it matters. Obviously, that's the whole point of this.
Sure.
But just tell people that you've done it. Challenge them to have the same conversation with their loved ones.
Right.
And that's how we push it out. And don't wait until the health crisis happens, because then it's too late.
Right.
It's not the time to do it then.
And honestly, one of the things you said a minute ago to me is one of the beautiful parts of this is it can start with, are you there, Nathan?
Yeah, I'm here. Looks like we have another person on.
Yeah, I know. Lori, I'll be right with you, okay? That's so funny. I've got another interview coming up in a little bit. But one of the most beautiful parts of what we're talking about is that when you have that conversation with your family and loved ones, it will probably be the most special. It will take your relationship to a whole new level of love and compassion and understanding. You will know each other in a whole deeper, more meaningful way than you did before the conversation. I mean, it's such a wonderful, it's not only a gift, it's a fabulous way to connect with your loved ones in a way that you never did before.
Yeah, and that raises a question of approach. One of the suggestions that I give people is, if you don't know how to bring up the topic with your mom or your dad, and they don't want to talk about death and dying and things like that, turn the table on them a little bit and say, you know, Mom, I love you so much. And I love you to the point that I want to be sure that I am honoring you until the moment you're gone. Will you tell me how I can best do that? How can you not respond with something meaningful to a request like that?
And a lot of people will say, and I know you've heard this, well, I can't get her to talk to me about it. She refuses to talk to me about it. And I will say, ask her if she really wants you and your siblings to be in a fight and potentially ruin your relationship for the rest of your lives because she wasn't willing to share her wishes.
That's right.
She doesn't want that. You know she doesn't want that.
But I don't think you even have to get there. Again, if you go with the, Mom, I love you so much, I want to be able to honor you.
Yes.
What a great way to turn that thing around.
That's right. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. So just to wrap it up, are there any, please do what Nathan suggested and go to the website, nhdd.org, share it on Facebook, do your part to try to get people comfortable having these conversations. Focus on the fact that you're going to enrich your relationship with your loved ones by having these conversations. And then Nathan, you know, any parting thoughts or words that you would like to share with the listeners?
Just to please hop on board. There's no cost to participate. There's no structure that's required. This is totally loose. As I said, it's grassroots. But please go onto the website, nhdd.org. Click on the link to join us. If you do, you'll get an email from me every month, just one. That's all I do, one email a month on the 16th of the month to keep you sort of on track and, you know, keep you posted on any major news or things like that. But then if you're with an organization, find out, have they been participating in the past? If not, get them on board and make sure that you're doing it at a personal level. Make sure that if you are someone in the healthcare system, look at your systems. Do the nurses and the physicians in your organization know what the rules are with respect to state law? Do they know where to find the forms and the resources to hand to patients? And then actually engage them in the topic. Don't just let this be something that, from a regulatory checklist gets done by the registrar. When you're coming in, you're showing all your information and getting signed into the hospital. This is about the delivery of care. So the doctors and the nurses have to be engaged in this, not just the person who's the intake person. So those are some of the ways in which we translate what we know is important into actual practice.
That's right. And it starts with having that conversation.
Yep.
You know, you can't do the documents until you've thought about what you want, under what conditions you want it, and then have the conversation and then get the documents done. But just just make sure you start talking about it. You know?
And don't make it such a big deal that it becomes overwhelming. And first of all, the conversation is never done. It's not a one and done sort of affair. So just get started however you want. Go on the website, click on the video, and use that as step one, and then revisit it a month from now, a year from now, whatever it is, but just get started. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
And you know what? That was a perfect last best practice or suggestion to give everybody. Go look at that Imagine video on their home. It's on your homepage, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Just take 3 minutes and 20 seconds and watch that video, and you will be in a whole different state of mind about the whole topic.
I couldn't agree more.
Nathan, your practice is McGuire Woods, is that correct?
Correct, yep.
In Richmond, Virginia.
You got it.
Oh my goodness, what an honor to have you, the man who created National Healthcare Decisions Day for April 16. Get your taxes done on the 15th and get your healthcare decisions handled on April 16 of every single year. So, thank you so much. This has been a real, real honor. And I hope everybody will take your suggestions and just start taking some action today.
Well, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.